The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, approached Jesus. "Master," they said to him, "we want you to do us a favor." He said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Allow us to sit one at your right hand and the other at your left in your glory." "You do not know what you're asking," Jesus said to them. "Can you drink the cup that I must drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I must be baptized?" They replied, "We can." Jesus said to them, "The cup that I must drink, you shall drink, and with the baptism with which I must be baptized, you shall be baptized. But as for seats at my right hand or my left, these are not mine to grant. They belong to those to whom they have been allotted." When the other 10 heard this, they began to feel indignant with James and John. So Jesus called them to him and said to them, "You know that among the pagans, their so-called rulers lord it over them, and their great men make their authority felt. This is not to happen among you. No. Anyone who wants to become great among you must be your servant. And anyone who wants to be first among you must be slave to all. For the Son of Man himself did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. Probably all fallen into the same trap as James and John on occasions. "Master, we want you to do us a favor." You no doubt know the little story about the little lad who took the statue of Mary from the mantelpiece at home and hid it in a drawer. And then he prayed, "Jesus, if you want to see your mummy again, you better give me what I want." And our prayer can sometimes be a bit like this. We sort of almost bargain with God. It's not wanting to diminish our prayer at all. Prayer is most important, it's fundamental. But reminding us that our prayer should always be, "Thy will be done." An old hymn has it, "Thy way, not mine, O Lord, however dark it be." And we know sometimes our lives, it can seem very dark indeed. But in a way, that was what was happening. The situation that we've just heard about grew out of the third prediction of the Passion. And Mark is trying to tell us that the disciples, in a way, were in a bit of a daze. Certainly James and John were lost in a cloud of incomprehension. They didn't understand, in a way, what Jesus was saying, so they just wanted to make sure that whatever it was, and when it was all over, they'd be all right. So in a way, what he'd been saying to them hadn't sunk in at all. And of course, they seemed to remember nothing of a week or so ago that we had in our gospel, which was probably the same time scale for them as well, when they'd been arguing with each other on the road about who was the most important. And it's then that Jesus sets a little child in front of them. That's all forgotten now. As long as we've got the best seats, we'll be all right. And of course, they come asking for a favor because they'd probably seen many people coming to Jesus and doing the same thing. People that came for healing, people that came asking things, people that Jesus had fed, all those sort of miracles that had happened. I suppose people had come, so they thought, well, we can ask one for ourselves too. But there's a sense in which, with James and John, it seems incredibly selfish what they're looking for. Their own prestige, the two places of high honor for just the two of them. Don't worry about anybody else. Jesus doesn't slam them down. He just gently, in this compassionate way, gives them the sort of benefit of ignorance. "Well, you don't know what you're asking. Can you really be baptized as I will, or can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink?" because he's giving it that broader perspective of what lies ahead for all Christians. And in a way, we're meeting here what Mark's keen for us to understand from his gospel. He wants us to move away from a religion that's centered on miracles and all those other sort of things that were drawing people and divine favors, to a religion that's of humble service in Christ's name, because that's why he came. And so it's that question, can you drink or be baptized? Now, go away from sacraments, because this is before the sacraments have been instituted. Drinking the cup to the hearers of the time would be a metaphorical way of describing accepting the will of God, whether that was a bitter cup or a sweet cup. And baptism meant being bathed in the seas of God's will, which sometimes permits calamity and suffering contrary to our own wishes. That's what we know in real life. And the only favor Jesus would grant and promise is the privilege of sharing his cross. And as to the glory and the perks that may come with all that, you leave that to the Father. But of course, if we concentrate just on James and John, the other 10 weren't much better either, because they were outraged because the brothers had tried to steal a march on them. Because imagine if James and John, what about Peter and Andrew? You know, all the emotions that we go through when we're upset by the way people are all around us. And that's the clue again. What does Jesus do? He calls them round him, brings them all together into unity in a way, uses this sorry occasion to give them this unforgettable lesson on the Christian attitude to power and authority and the way he deals with things. And so he speaks about the Roman authority in a sense. You know, those set over us, lord it over them. It will not be so with you. He was dealing with the Roman authorities. We know today there are always those over us who wish to make their authority felt one way or another. Today it may be the lust for power, and it's expressed in competitiveness. So we've got to be better. We've got to have targets, and we've got to be the tick-box society. And I know, speaking with whether it's in the health service or it's in our schools, but in so many aspects of life, that huge pressure to tick the boxes, pressure at work, that provides intolerable strains that are put on home life and personal health, in order that those that are in authority over us, we must do it. We feel the same over ticking all the boxes for health and safety. Of course, we know they matter. But there's more to all that. And that, in a way, is what I think the Lord's trying to say. There's only one way. And I know one of our staff who was feeling very much under pressure, why has the Lord put me in all this? Just in the way that the way of the cross is always round us. And that's why, our churches are always so sensible, because we've been doing it for 2,000 years. They're always there. And it's reminding us that whatever's going on, whether it's the persecution in other parts of the world, whether it's society around us, whatever it is, there's only one way we go with Jesus, and it's the road to Calvary. But the road to Calvary leads through always to the resurrection. So in a way, the attitude of Christ to either other authorities or giving us seats of honor is diametrically opposed to lust for power. The testing ground for every Christian is that of humility, because we serve a Lord who was humble. He humbled himself, becoming one among us. Being first among us, he humbled himself even more to be the servant, to be the slave of all, as the writer to Philippians puts it. As it were, three descending steps of humility for us. And there he then becomes the slave and yet the ransomer of many. And in a way, I think Pope Francis has been trying to say exactly the same message since his election. A church for the poor, a church of the poor, a humble servant of those in the world. And as we approach the year of mercy, again, that's going to only heighten some things from this morning's gospel. We, like Francis, like the Lord, must be servants to each other. The joy of any disciple to say is, I am here to serve.